line with the recent OMB, Federal Data Sensor Consolidation Initiative. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
Welcome to Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, and it's sponsored by GTSI and Oracle here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests today are Jim Sweeney. He's manager of virtualization consulting practice at GTSI. Harry Foxwell, principal technical consultant at Oracle Public Sector. And Brian Klopak, he's director of research at the Government Business Council. Gentlemen, great to have you with us. All right, let's get right into it. Now, there's a new impetus for federal agencies to have virtualization, to conduct virtualization, and that is the Office of Management and Budget's new mandate for federal agencies to reduce and consolidate their data centers. And so why don't we start with you, Jim Sweeney of DTSI. What does that mean for virtualization? What does virtualization have to do with data center consolidation?
Well, I think that there's a lot that virtualization can do for consolidation. I think the overall objective of the memo from OMB is to get agencies to look at the power, cooling, and space that they're using, at the number of facilities that they're using, and try to consolidate them down. And that's done a lot easier through virtualization.
And Harry, tell us exactly what virtualization is, because before we get too deep into this, people might be wondering. In fact, later on, we'll have evidence that people do need to know what it is. But what is virtualization?
A simple way of describing it is that it raises the operating system and application above the connection to the hardware. It lets you build what we call virtual environments that can be loaded onto an underlying software structure that will allow you to move it around, to encapsulate it, to...
So does it mean I could take the content of three or four or five machines and put them on one machine, and to the users it'll look like they all have the same machines, but I only have one box physically?
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, because today's boxes or servers are so powerful today that in order to take advantage of the power that's there, you really ought to put more than one operating and application environment on top of it.
I mean, a function that we see in a lot of data centers is too many servers, because every time people want to add a function, that means that they add a server, and it may not be necessary to do that. Jim?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely not necessary. And don't stop at 3, 4, 5. We've got customers running 35 and 40 virtual machines on one physical server. So in one particular example, I know one agency has taken roughly 700 physical machines out of their data center. They were able to consolidate so much, which is a great start, right?
And so how do data centers proliferate so much in the first place? Why are there, 20 years ago, we talked about getting rid of data centers. We did it again 15 years ago. Now OMB is saying doing it again, and it always seems to be grow to the same number, the same couple of thousand. How does that happen?
Based on old habits and old perceptions that in order to create a safe environment for my application, I've got to put it on its own server. And you replicate lots of different applications, and you start replicating hardware servers, and soon you've got what the industry calls server sprawl.
So lots of inefficiency there, and we'll get to the different forms of inefficiency as we go out through the day here. And Brian, the Government Business Council has done some research in virtualization, and you found that many people need the second question we asked, and that is what it is. Tell us what the survey told us about the federal government and its knowledge and connection to virtualization.
Sure. We launched the survey in February of this year to the audience of Government Executive Magazine, so primarily focusing on upper-level agency management and the IT management community. Now, amongst these folks, awareness was very low. We had just under 250 completed surveys. 33% were unfamiliar. They did not know enough to continue answering the survey. So those folks dropped to the end, and the folks who did know enough, a quarter of which didn't know what was being done at their agency in terms of implementing or operating. They did know, however, 84% said that they agree that there will be a major benefit in their agency. 64% felt strongly that there would be a major benefit at their agency, but they don't really know what it is. They're kind of confused, and they have a lot of concerns around security and implementation, but they think in the end there is a solid benefit to virtualization.
So it sounds kind of like statin drugs. We know it's good for us. We're not sure exactly what they are. And so, Jim, is virtualization as a activity, as a topic, something only for the technology shop, or should agency management also be concerned with this whole effort?
No, agency management really needs to be concerned with it because virtualization as a technology has lived in the IT world for the last several years. But what we find is that virtualization forces changes in procedures at the agency level, right? And so management really needs to be aware of what's going on within virtualization within your agency.
So maybe that's why the OMB memo went to agency heads, not just to the CIO people.
Right.
It also changes procurement policies and procedures, where if you need a server earlier, you had to buy one and get it delivered and hook it up. Now, if you want to create a server with virtualization, you just type a command and now you have a new server. So it changes the whole procurement model and architecture model.
So that means if, to use Jim's earlier example, if an agency had 700 servers that they consolidated down to a couple of physical machines, that means there's 700 procurements potentially that could have been avoided with all the time and effort and expense just of that part of the whole issue.
That's absolutely right. And by the way, the maintenance on those servers and the software licenses on some of those servers and the power, cooling, and space that those servers take up for the life of that server, the numbers get to be pretty staggering pretty quickly.
And Brian, what are some other numbers we need to know about that came from that survey other than the fact that agency management knows this is good for them, but they don't quite know what it is? Mm-hmm. And now they will after they hear this.
Well, it's interesting. We usually ask in our surveys various roadblocks or concerns that you may have with new technologies or new initiatives, whatever the issue of the day is that we are studying. Now, on this one specifically, we asked about concerns along 11 different dimensions, which is a bit of a laundry list of different areas that you can be concerned about, whether it's implementation or operations. Along those 11, we expected maybe a 40% cut, but from the top concern to the least concern. There were 11 points. Percentage points between the top and the bottom.
So everybody's concerned about everything.
Exactly. Everybody is scared about everything.
And so what are they afraid of? What are the concerns? Again, we're talking about agency management and not necessarily just the techies.
Correct. We had a pretty good split of agency management and IT folks specifically. It's interesting. Across the board, at the very top, their concern is security. Yesterday we had a webinar with government executive, and we pulled our audience live as we discussed these results. 93% of attendees said security is a major concern of theirs with virtualization. So in the survey, we wanted to go a little bit deeper. Obviously, security is a concern, but how? There are a lot of different dimensions. So we asked across 5 different dimensions, and I'm sure Harry and Jim can get a little bit more specific into those. But across the board, 75% listed each of them as major concerns that will stop them from virtualizing.
So I guess it's fair to say that the main worry, if you add up all those 11 concerns, is will my IT infrastructure keep delivering when these guys down in the shop do all this mysterious work called virtualization?
Exactly. And I think it's most interesting in that out of the 11, the top 6 concerns were human concerns. They were cultural concerns. They weren't the technical issues. So it wasn't, we don't have the network capability, we have these various limitations. It was leadership. It was funding. It was cultural resistance to change. They weren't technical issues. They were the human concerns.
Now, Jim, you do the consulting for GTSI in virtualization. Do you run into that cultural problem, or what does this mean for my job, or will I have the same size staff if I get rid of 700 servers? What are some of the issues you run into with clients?
Yeah, great question, Tom. So there's a lot of FUD out there around virtualization. People think that they will lose control of their machine because it's no longer a physical device. It's now in a data center somewhere that they can't see. There's a lot of misunderstanding out there, and what we find is when we take an agency through the very beginnings of virtualization and into through a proof of concept and some assessments and things like that, what we find is they're overwhelmingly satisfied with virtualization and the things that it's doing for their agency and the ways that it's helping them, as Harry said, provision a new server very quickly, but just as quickly, by the way, decommission a server when you're ready to get rid of it.
Okay, so we have some cultural issues. We have some lack of knowledge. Harry, you also do consulting with federal agencies, and you're pretty technically minded. What are some of the other roadblocks for people getting started in the whole virtualization issue?
Well, lack of understanding of what it is, as we mentioned earlier, and a tendency to latch on to one-size-fits-all solutions where I think I know what virtualization is, and so that's what I buy, and I don't look at all the alternatives. So education, understanding what it's all about, and then understanding that there are lots and lots of choices about how to do virtualization so that you can use the best kind of virtualization for the best kind of application environment.
Okay, so that leads us to a good question here then is, how do you get started? What's the first thing you do? I've got a memo. OMB is telling me to get rid of data centers. Management is saying, hey, there's a memo I got from OMB. You got to do something here. And I'm the CIO. I'm the data center manager. And I may or may not have done this before. What's step one, Jim?
Well, step one is learning about the technology and what it can do for you. There's lots of good information out on the web. GTSI has its own virtualization zone where there's white papers and videos of demonstrations and things like that. How do we get started with customers is really leading them through an assessment phase because there's a lot of fear around, well, is it right for my application? What will it do to me? How will it perform in my particular environment with my particular requirements? So we like to step back from the manufacturers a little bit, work with customers on their requirements, do an assessment for them. There are tools out there, and we use these tools on a regular basis to look at your physical environment and figure out what a virtual environment would look like for you and how much money you would, in fact, save. And then we try and go through a proof of concept stage with them so that they can invest a little bit of money, try it in their environment with their applications and their data, and then really prove out the ROI and the architecture and then move on to a full virtualized environment.
Okay, and Harry, do you find that people, when they are looking and doing this assessment, is there a tendency, perhaps mistakenly, on the part of the data center operators to want to just gild the lily, make sure they have 200% of capacity that they need after they virtualize? And how do you convince people to really believe in the fact that they can do this and get rid of a lot of this overhead capacity that's never used?
Well, part of it is trying it out and becoming familiar. And that includes not only the people that are responsible for running your data center, but people who are responsible for understanding just what the technology is all about. You can download free virtualization technology from many vendors, from many open source sources, and just play with it and learn it. It doesn't cost you anything. And that kind of learning is important all the way up to the high level manager management decisions.
And if you've got 10 or 50 or 700 servers running before you virtualize, how do you get to the point where you know exactly what you really need?
Experimentation. There are some modeling tools that are out there. They're still rather primitive. Some of them come from vendors who have a stake in how you decide to do the virtualization. But deciding how to virtualize and how much to virtualize and what you can put on a common platform, that requires some experience and learning and trial and error.
And Jim, how long does that whole process take? Does it take less than a year to do the assessment?
Well, in some agencies it happens very quickly, and in some it's taken multiple years. I will add, by the way, that GTSI has a lab here in Herndon, Virginia. And with our vendor partners, both hardware and software, we run five different virtualization clusters now, and we have customers all the time who come out and try their applications in our lab, either remotely or locally, and see how they're going to perform. So they get a better idea of, well, wait a minute, this will work for me, and it'll work just fine.
And just a detail here. Are they able to run those tests using actual live data so they can really test the environment as they see it in their daily operations?
They can. If they're not comfortable putting live data in our lab, that's when we do a proof of concept where we build a small system for them that they can in their facility that they can do that with.
And Brian, I imagine cost must be a concern that was expressed in the survey. What did the respondents say about that?
It is. About 68% of our respondents consider the cost of implementing and operating a virtualized environment to be a major or a minor concern. And that relates, interestingly, to another line of questioning we had around expectations along a variety of dimensions. And one was return on investment and ROI. And along about five different dimensions, including sustainability, COOP, et cetera, return investment met their expectations the least. A lot of them said it was too early to tell, too soon to tell if when they'd actually see that ROI, that return on investment. They could respond more accurately to the more it's portable, it's flexible, et cetera. But cost is a major concern, and they haven't really seen the ROI for those who have implemented some type of virtualized environment.
Well, to calculate ROI, you first have to know what the I part is. And without getting into detail on prices, give us an idea, Jim, of what the cost components are in doing a virtualization.
Well, so a lot of times we can reuse hardware, or you time this so that you're at a hardware refresh anyway, so that investment is rather minimal. But I think the management software is really where and the change in the infrastructure is where the costs lie. I mean, yeah, the software costs something, right? But given the rates of consolidation today, that's actually minimal. Really, it's the management of this infrastructure and the changes in the organization that are going to bring the cost, right? But that's also where you see a really good ROI.
And Harry, are there training issues and do the skills that people have for running a non-virtualized data center, can they translate over to running a virtualized environment?
Well, that can be difficult, and people costs are generally more expensive than hardware or software costs. I do want to add to what Jim said about the expense. The most modern operating systems come with virtualization capability built in of some kind. Solaris does, Microsoft Server 2008 does, some versions of Linux do. And so the ability to virtualize a machine is cheap. The ability to manage it requires expensive software and services. So that's another part of the expense component that people are worried about. And then, of course, the training. Most people are not trained and have long experience in virtualized environments because it is still relatively new in many of the agency data centers.
Our guests today are Jim Sweeney, manager of virtualization consulting practice at GTSI, Harry Foxwell, principal technical consultant at Oracle Public Sector, and Brian Klopak, Director of Research at Government Business Council. This is the Virtually There Roundtable, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Across government, federal IT managers are contending with the OMB directive to consolidate data centers. Are you on the right path? Join leading experts from government and industry as they chart a practical roadmap to OMB compliance at the GTSI Technology Leadership Series, May 12th at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Attend and receive a free copy of their new federal IT survey on virtualization. To register, visit gtsi.com/TLS. GTSI, one mission, yours.
Data center consolidation. It's the mandate of the day. And across federal agencies, IT managers are under mounting pressure to arrive at a workable solution, to save costs, to boost efficiencies. We can help you map a path to greater control with a consolidation solution from GTSI. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Welcome back to Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, and it's sponsored by GTSI and Oracle here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests today are Jim Sweeney, he's manager of virtualization consulting practice at GTSI, Harry Foxwell, principal technical consultant at Oracle Public Sector, and Brian Klopak, director of research at Government Business Council. And Brian, why don't we start with you on the security issue? Because I'm sure that's something that came up in the survey that you did of executives across the federal government, both technical and managerial, and they expressed 11 major concerns that they had. Some of those were security. Give us a little more detail on the security concerns people have surrounding virtualization.
Sure. We broke that out into a separate question, actually. We knew that we've heard from our editorial staff, from our readers all the time, that is a major concern of folks with a virtualized IT environment. So we asked along a variety of different dimensions. Number one was ensuring isolation and confidentiality of data. 75% of respondents think that that's a major concern, and they're concerned that a virtualized IT environment cannot perform in that aspect. That was closely followed by unauthorized access to multiple systems and resources. So I'm sure Harry and Jim can get a lot more into the specifics of what those really mean, but those are top of mind in terms of the security issues that they find across the board.
Okay, and we're going to talk about performance issues as well, but let's continue on the idea of security. Jim, what are the security solutions? How do you make sure that virtualized environments are secure?
Well, Tom, it runs the gamut. We have users who say our security officers absolutely need an air gap, and so we can't run machines of different security levels on one physical box. And yet we have instances where customers are running virtualization in a multi-level security environment. So it really depends on the security officer. And where GTSI can help is to really get those two security officers talking, right? So there are some valid concerns around security that have happened before in previous versions of the virtualization software that's out there, where you really couldn't tell some of the network traffic that was running between virtual machines. That's really been solved with some of the newer versions, and actually, what we're running in our lab, we're finding we're even more secure than we were before virtualization.
And Harry, what have you found in your consulting, you know, from the Oracle side, from the software side, and I know you come from the Sun Microsystems acquisition, so there's a hardware and software side. What are some of the security issues you see?
Well, to follow up on what Jim said, there's a possibility that virtualization can enhance security if it brings all of the environments under one security policy. So that's sort of a procedural benefit to virtualization. There was one survey that found that half of data centers today depend on perimeter security, meaning, you know, the outside internet and the inside supposedly secure environment. They depend simply on firewalls to protect their data. And that is really not sufficient. Today, if you have virtualized environments, you need to assume inside your own data center infrastructure a lack of trust among the machines and the virtual machines that are running in there. So you have to implement best practices for internal security as well as protecting your environment from outside. And so the task then is to create security policies that recognize internal security is as necessary as protecting from the outside internet.
And bottom line, is it possible for the virtualizer, the CIO, the data center people, to be able to say to management that this environment is as secure as it was at least when we had non-virtualized and all these servers running?
Well, if you ever ask a security professional if something is secure, they will never say yes. They will say you have reduced the risk. And you can indeed reduce risk using various techniques, encryption of data at rest, encryption of data in transit over your network, and other kinds of security techniques to make sure that your internal and external access is safe.
But can virtualization enhance security, or let's say reduce the risk even further by what is in virtualization as a technique?
As assuming you follow the best practices, yes, it can.
Okay, so that's a good benefit then, that you can get a little bit less risk by virtualizing than you would have had before you started.
Right, and more monitoring capabilities that you didn't have before.
Okay, and so that leads us to this whole question of benefits. We were talking about return on investment before the break, and we talked a little bit about what the investment is. Return has to take a lot of different forms. Let's talk about performance, because that's something, Brian, you mentioned in the survey. Did performance of the resulting network or application cluster come up in the survey? And what did people say about that?
It did a little bit, but awareness was so low, then they're not really sure. They were more able to answer along the metric of implementation. So they told us that their agencies across the board are moving just too slow to implement. I think 20% said they're moving at the right pace, and the rest said it's just going too slow.
Okay, so it sounds like they're saying, so virtualize already.
Exactly. And we also asked along the lines of priorities. Is it a priority at your agency? I think it was 48% said it was either not a priority or a low priority. The folks that said low said were a lot of them were coming from the program manager community and the agency leadership community, and they said that they're talking to their IT folks and they're driving it, but no one's answering. That they have a lot on their plate and it's not a top priority, and they see the benefit, but it's not going through.
And so, Jim, from a performance standpoint of your applications, should you as a manager be saying to the technical department, based on performance, we need to virtualize?
Well, not only performance, Tom, but really flexibility, right? So where you really gain with virtualization is the flexibility to move a virtual workload, an operating system and an application, from one physical machine to another, as you need to increase the overall performance of the environment, right? And so, from a performance perspective and a flexibility perspective and a management control perspective, absolutely, they need to start virtualizing. Now, we need to be smart about how we virtualize, and we at GTSI have lots of architects who can help customers do this. It's probably not a good idea to start virtualizing with your Exchange servers. Maybe you want to look down at your application servers and your web servers, and as you move forward and get a little more experience with virtualization, a little more comfortable with its benefits and how the nuances of it work, then you might actually move up to the database servers and beyond.
And Harry, what are some of the other big metrics of performance? Because obviously that's a broad word, and it can be management performance of the system. What are some of the others?
Well, one thing that is useful to understand about virtualization is really about workload management, how you allocate resources among the various environments that are running your applications. Virtualization allows you to consolidate multiple application environments on a shared server, and then very, very flexibly reallocate resources to them as needed. You can't make a physical server bigger in terms of the resources it needs to run an application. If the application uses up all the resources and you need more, you got to move it to a bigger server. If you're reallocating resources within a large server, you can reduce the resources that are allocated to a less important application and add resources to the more important application extremely flexibly using virtualization. So that helps you manage your performance.
And when we talked about security, we said that it's possible to make the statement, if you do this right, that the risk has been reduced to some degree because we virtualized. Is it also possible to say that performance has been improved somewhat because we virtualized?
Well, certainly. And also the utilization of your system, of your systems, goes up if you put more applications and shared on a shared resource rather than dedicating an over-provisioned resource to every single application that you have.
And how do you know when it's time to add a server? Because we just got through virtualization, we've fulfilled the OMB mandate, we might even have closed buildings or large rooms and gotten things consolidated physically and in a software sense, got rid of 700 down to 5. How do you know when it's time to add number 6?
Well, actually, it's interesting. So there are realistic goals for virtualization, right? And the average unvirtualized server today is running between about 3% and 10% utilization rate, right? Our goal for virtualization is not 100%, but 70% or 80%. So if you do that across 5 or 10 or 20 physical servers, you've got what we call headroom in there. But you can add 5 servers or 10 servers, virtual machines I'm talking about, before you have to add another physical machine, right? So you can go between, say, 60% and 80% or 85% before you need to add another physical device, and that gives you time to do that.
Virtualization rates are basically going down because processors, computers are getting so much more powerful that it's hard to stress a modern processor to the point where you're actually using all of its capability. And so virtualization gives you the ability to actually use what you purchased.
Yeah, I remember the graphics shows of the 80s when they would show how much power they had. They could rotate a physical wireframe head 360 degrees. Now you can do that on your cell phone. All right, I wanted to also ask about backup and recovery, because that's a big function of data centers. And is there an effect on that by virtue of virtualization?
Absolutely. The virtualization techniques that are out there today allow you to take a snapshot of your environment, save it, clone it, make a copy of it, make a change to a copy if you don't like the change that you made, you go back to the original. It does make your environmental experimentation a whole lot easier.
So everybody asks us, Tom, about the amount of power and amount of cooling and amount of space that they're using in a data center. But it's a shame that it's not more known that, in fact, customers come to us with a problem that says, my backup window is too short. How do I handle that? Well, believe it or not, virtualization will help that, because one of the tenets of virtualization is this thing called encapsulation, where the operating system and the application are just a big file. Right. When you create a virtual machine, the system asks you how many processors do you want, how much memory do you want, and how much hard disk. Well, that hard disk is basically just a big file. Well, once I've got it as a file, I can do all sorts of magical things with it. Like Harry said, I can take a snapshot of it and then go back to using that virtual machine while I take a backup of the snapshot. So my backup window goes from hours to just a few minutes.
Yeah, if you have a requirement for backup recovery, say, of 12 hours, but the environment actually takes 13 hours to back up, you've got a problem.
You have a very big problem, and many, many agencies have that problem today.
Okay, and you mentioned another benefit that I'd like to get into and explore a little further, and that is the whole cost issue related to energy, because there's also a green mandate from OMB and from the presidential order that just came out from President Obama. It built on a presidential order that goes back to the Bush administration, so this greening issue has really been on agencies. And the second sentence you always hear is, and one of the biggest power consumers in an agency is the data center, all the IT infrastructure. Talk about the green aspects of virtualization.
Well, Tom, 6% of all power that's generated in the United States today is used in data centers, not just federal government or state and local government, but data centers throughout our country. That's a huge amount of electricity. So about 2 years ago, another engineer and I at GTSI looked for a good green IT calculator that would show customers what they were saving in terms of power and cooling and space and what they could save with virtualization. We didn't find one, so we went in our lab, took a bunch of measurements, and created a calculator. It's on our website at gtsi.com under the virtualization zone. It's called the Green IT Calculator. But basically, I was at an agency last week, and we're going to take them from 1,000 servers to 56, and we're going to save them $2 million a year in power and cooling. Those are very significant numbers.
You're producing a lot of doorstops for that agency.
Absolutely. And, of course, we won't do that in 30 days. That'll be done over the tech refresh cycle so that we're not wasting money. But if it takes us 3 years to get to that, still over the life of that project, the amount of money we'll have saved the taxpayers in that agency is very significant.
So breaking that down a little bit further then, we have, tell me if I'm right here, two basic components of that 6% of power. One is the microprocessors, right, or let's say the servers, because they're spinning media and those use a lot of energy. And then there's the cooling and air conditioning, the HVAC part. Is that the two biggest?
Exactly. You have some proof of that in a study that was done by the EPA in 2006, where they studied the government's IT infrastructure, and they found that half of the power goes to keeping the lights on, keeping the thing cool, basically just keeping the rooms available, and not really devoting that power to actual computation. It also turned out in that same survey that the biggest users of that additional extra power were all of these little rack, single rack unit servers, what the industry has called volume servers, because they're sold in hundreds and thousands at a time. And that's the kind of thing that you want to virtualize and consolidate to save that power, floor space, cooling, and so on.
And it's hard to express sometimes, but it's safe to say that if you have five servers, say, running at 20% capacity, you're going to save a lot of power versus one server even running at 100% capacity.
Exactly, because servers consume power when they're not doing anything if you've got them turned on.
Just their mere existence being plugged in is consuming power.
90% of what you put into a computer comes back out as heat. And in fact, for every watt of heat you put out, you've got to have a watt of cooling to cool that. That's what makes the ROI for server virtualization so very high, is that it's a double-edged sword. Every server you take out, you save the electricity to run that which would have produced that heat, and then you save the electricity to cool that heat that was produced.
So there's almost a multiplying effect from virtualization. And Brian, I imagine that came up a lot in the survey.
It did. We asked our respondents about the incentives or the drivers that they have to virtualize. Now, the number one response with 54% was COOP, or disaster planning. Now, this came, we sent out the survey the week of Snowmageddon, or Snowpocalypse, if you will. So we think that that probably was a good reason for that bump. But close number two was sustainability and energy savings, a greener IT. So that message is getting through, that virtualization is an answer to the energy issues in the federal space.
Well, we're going to take a break here. We're speaking with Brian Klopak. He's Director of Research at the Government Business Council. Harry Foxwell, Principal Technical Consultant at Oracle Public Sector, and Jim Sweeney, Manager of the Virtualization Consulting Practice at GTSI. And we'll be back in just a moment. This is the Virtually There Roundtable, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What are the latest strategies for meeting the OMB directive for data center consolidation? Join leading experts from government and industry as they explore the best in consolidation and how to chart a practical roadmap to OMB compliance at the GTSI Technology Leadership Series, May 12th at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Attend and receive a free copy of their new federal IT survey on virtualization. To register, visit gtsi.com/TLS. GTSI, one mission, yours.
Looking to cut your data center cost while maintaining your level of service? With a virtualization solution from GTSI, your IT becomes more efficient, application deployment is accelerated, services are more predictable, and upfront planning results in increased long-term savings. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Welcome back to Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin. Our guests today are Jim Sweeney, Manager of the Virtualization Consulting Practice at GTSI, Harry Foxwell, Principal Technical Consultant at Oracle Public Sector, and Brian Klopak, Director of Research at Government Business Council. And gentlemen, we've been talking all this hour about virtualization as if it were one single thing. But in fact, there are many flavors of virtualization. And why don't we talk about what some of those types are so that people can get a more fine-grained understanding of this whole topic?
Virtualization is a broad term. Typically, it includes taking a large server and cutting it up into smaller environments. You can do that with large-scale enterprise-class mainframe systems, Unix systems, IBM mainframes, and those are typically called hardware domains. You're not really doing any abstraction of devices, so it's not true virtualization, but it comes under the same family of taking a large system and cutting it up into smaller pieces. Then there is the traditional, if you want to call it that, hypervisor-based virtualization, where you have a software layer that runs on the hardware, and then it allows you to layer other operating systems and applications on top of that. And that's very common. That's Microsoft's Hyper-V, that's VMware, that's the Xen-based open source product.
You could almost think of those as an OS for OSs.
Exactly. That's a very good way of explaining it. And then another one that people tend to forget about is what some people call lightweight virtualization, where you create an environment that looks like a server, but it's not a full kernel, where all it is an environment that has a host name, an IP address, and a restricted space that it runs in. You can do that with Solaris, you can do that with Linux, and it's a very efficient way of doing virtualization. So there's a whole raft of potential technologies, each of which has potential benefits and drawbacks.
So in DoD, they would call that a lieutenant colonel, I guess you might say. Bad joke. All right, Jim, and another topic we haven't really mentioned that much is desktop virtualization as opposed to server virtualization. That's something a little bit newer coming along. What do we know about it?
Well, it is a little bit newer, Tom. People have just discovered that as I'm virtualizing my workloads, normally it's a Linux or a Solaris x86 or a Windows server platform, but geez, if I just ran Windows XP or Windows 7 or one of my desktop operating systems on it, I can also virtualize my desktops. And that was really the beginning of it. There are several vendors doing it now. Some of our biggest projects this year are in the desktop virtualization arena. I will tell you that normally agencies start at the server virtualization. It has a much higher ROI and a lot easier for people to sort of wrap their heads around. And once they use server virtualization for a while, I think it dawns on people, oh, wait a minute, if I just ran XP in Windows 7 here, I can virtualize all my desktops. That means my constituency or my users can access their desktops from anywhere, at home during a snow emergency, for example, or on the road or from an iPhone or wherever they're at, right? And yet I, the data center owner, get the flexibility of having it in the data center where I can patch it a lot more easily and back it up a lot more easily, et cetera. So it's a good benefit for everybody.
And so for the user, in other words, if they log on from somewhere, it doesn't matter what machine they use. They see their environment with all their preferences and so forth, regardless of the machine, even if it's a rented PC.
Another name for that the listeners may be familiar with is thin client computing, where all of your applications are running, including your desktop, back on a server, secured and centralized and centrally managed, and all you see at the end user end is a window into your application running on that server. So you can move the user around, and they can look at it from anywhere in the world. So there are thin client solutions, the Sunray, thin client solutions from Microsoft included, that basically have no state on the local client device, and all you're doing is projecting that desktop out to the end user.
And getting back to the server-based virtualizations, you mentioned there's several. There's the hypervisor type of architecture. There's also the shared hardware environment and a couple of others. Do you find, or is it necessary for people to expect that they're going to have different types running within the same virtualization project?
Oh, I absolutely think that's where we're going. And Gartner said it about 2 years ago now, that in the next 5 years, you're not going to select one hypervisor. You're going to be running a bunch of different hypervisors, and really the management tool that erupts really as the leader there, that can manage all of this environment as one, you know, one single environment, is going to be the winner. And for example, we have just installed in our lab a self-provisioning software that'll work with three different virtualization vendors now. So I can self-provision. I can go to a website and say, I want a virtual machine with this many processors and this much memory that looks like this with this software loaded, and I want it for this amount of time. And I can do that whether it's a VMware cluster or a Citrix cluster or whatever, right? And they're continuing to add capabilities to that. So it's a phenomenal tool.
There is an effort to have a standard for the definition and the structure of a virtual machine, so that if you built a VMware virtual machine, can you move it over to run on a Hyper-V environment, for example? So those standards are underway. They're not well developed yet, but that is something to watch.
And let's get to the research, too, because, Brian, I wonder if that came up in the research, the fact that virtualization is not one thing, and maybe that's what has people wondering what it is.
No, that's a great point, and that's a really good question. We ask that very specifically, breaking it down by server, storage, network, and desktop. We wanted to keep it at a high level because, again, we're dealing with agency leadership here. They aren't necessarily as knowledgeable in terms of the nuts and bolts. So across the board, server and storage are currently in the operating and maintaining stages in agencies across the government, with network and desktop kind of falling behind in terms of operating right now. However, desktop is number one in piloting and testing. So a lot of it seems to be the hot thing right now. They've already looked into the technology, and now they're starting to pilot it within their agencies.
Okay, and let's move on again here. Now, we started this conversation in the very beginning with OMB mandates, and there's an OMB mandate for data center consolidation. And we also talked about the presidential order on reducing power consumption and the general greening of the federal government. But there's a third OMB mandate that's out there, and that is telling agencies to try whenever they can to move to cloud computing. And rightly or wrongly, cloud computing and virtualization seem to come up in the same conversations. But Jim, they're not really the same, are they? Tell us the relationship between cloud and virtualization.
Well, cloud is a future state. There are a lot of people doing cloud right now that are working on next generations of clouds. I think it's important to note virtualization is not cloud. Virtualization is very much a requirement for cloud. There is a lot of confusion around cloud. I think we could probably do another hour segment on just cloud, but there's a lot of vendors out there that are saying they do cloud when in fact they really have just the very beginnings of cloud. That self-provisioning that we talked about a few minutes that we have running in our lab that we announced to all of our engineers so that they can self-provision is very much another tenet of cloud, right? So overlay that capability on a virtualized infrastructure and now you're moving more towards cloud. So when people ask us about cloud, we ask them, are you virtualized yet? And if the answer is no, we say, okay, well, let's start back here at the beginning. Let's assess what you have. Let's move you towards virtualization, onto DR and Coop, and then maybe onto cloud.
And it's a good idea to understand what cloud computing is by somebody's definition. All the vendors have their own definitions of what it is, some of them self-serving. But a good place to go is NIST. They have specified a definition.
And just for clarity, that's the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
Yes. And Peter Mell of NIST, their security group over there, has come up with a working definition. Actually, it's called a working draft because I imagine it will still evolve a bit. And it is a working definition of what cloud computing is. It includes concepts like multi-tenancy, more than one user group using a shared resource. It includes, as Jim says, self-provisioning. It includes metering, where you can charge back. So there are a number of characteristics. It's instructive to go look at that document to see exactly what an objective definition of what it is. Now, it also turns out that many of the agencies that say they want cloud computing, they don't want all those pieces. They just want the self-provisioning piece, or they just want the multi-tenancy piece for their constituencies.
Jim, anything to add?
Well, yeah, I absolutely agree with Harry. There's a lot of people saying they do cloud, and when you get right down to it, it's a remarketized version of web hosting, which we've been doing in IT now for a couple of decades, actually. So you read the NIST document, talk to your peers, read some of the blogs that are out there. There's some really good ones now. And I would also invite people again, come into the lab, to the GTSI lab, and try our provisioning and see if the provisioning and the chargeback and the modules that we have are enough for you.
And just to reiterate then, that you don't want to use the cloud to virtualize, but you want to virtualize and then look at ways to move it to the cloud. Would that be right, Harry?
That would be one path. Certainly, there's a learning path to consolidating applications on a smaller number of systems. You can use virtualization to help you out with that. As Jim said, virtualization is not cloud computing. You use virtualization to do the self-provisioning and some of the other techniques that you need to create what people are calling a public cloud, like Amazon, or a private cloud, as we see GSA is trying to put together.
Now, if people are imaginative, and I imagine people that worry about security have a pretty vivid imagination, if I have a virtual environment that I have then moved to a cloud server, a provider, should I worry that other virtualized environments are on the same virtual servers as my virtual environment, and that's kind of everybody together in the hot tub? Should I worry about the security implications of moving my virtualized environment to the cloud?
Absolutely, and there are best practices, and to make people feel a little more comfortable about this, the technologies are there to accomplish this. The policies aren't always there. The trust isn't always there, but the technologies are there to do secure computing in a cloud. You do have to follow best practices. A number of best practices are include encrypting everything, encrypting data at rest, encrypting data in transit, making sure that you clean things up when you're finished. If someone is using a resource and then they release it for someone else's use, have they left anything behind? So best practices like this are necessary to increase that level of trust that you can indeed do safe cloud computing, either for a private cloud or a public cloud like eBay or Amazon or Google.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Tom, some of the vendors are working on inter-cloud federation software now and the ability to say, I want this in my cloud today, but you know what? Tomorrow I can move it to the public cloud and the next day I can move it back from the public cloud into my internal cloud. And Harry's got a cloud and I trust Harry's cloud, so I can put things in Harry's cloud, but not Brian's cloud. So, you know, it's a ever-evolving industry with ever-evolving technology here.
And that gets back to the research, Brian, of this uncertainty. Maybe that's what's driving some of this, is the fact that there are many, many ways to skin the cat.
Exactly. We did ask, what would the ideal next steps be to further virtualization in your space, in your agency? Number one across the board was education and training, was learning about these issues. We've done a lot of surveys in the space and focus groups, and across the board, federal managers equate cloud computing and virtualization. They have all these security concerns. There are a lot of issues that they currently see in the space, and with a little education and training and dispelling some misconceptions, I think it would be an entirely different picture.
Okay, and Jim, what are some of the great resources that people should go to first? Because there's an awful lot out there on all of these topics, virtualization, security. How do you know what the good sources are, the vetted ones, the ones you can trust?
Well, there are a lot of resources out there. Some of them aren't always correct. I like to tell customers that they should check with their peers. Take some of the industry training that's out there. I can tell you, we at GTSI, between our pre-sales and our post-sales engineering groups, have spent an inordinate amount of money getting people certified and trained and in our lab using our environment so that we can talk to customers in an intelligent way. There is one site. I will refer people to our site. I think we're very much an independent site. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you, we won VMware's Federal Partner of the Year last year, and we also won Citrix's Federal Partner of the Year last year. So I think that shows a little bit of vendor independence. But the GTSI Virtualization Zone, which is at gtsi.com/virtualization, there are white papers there, the calculator that we talked about.
The energy savings calculator.
Right, that users can go and try for themselves and see what their energy savings might look like. It has white papers. It has videos of some of our technology leadership series that we've done on desktop computing and cloud computing and server virtualization are all there that they can view. It's really a good resource to start.
And Harry, what are some of the places you like to go or recommend for education and getting started?
Well, I like to read all the vendor websites, including obviously Oracle, our competitors, IBM, HP, and what they're saying about cloud computing, because some of what they say is very useful from an educational point of view. You need to get a broad view of all of the different approaches that these vendors take. There are books that you can find on cloud computing and virtualization. Just go to Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or Borders and type in virtualization or cloud, and you'll find that there are dozens, if not hundreds, of books on the topic. So it is a very popular topic. You can do some self-education if you discipline yourself to do some homework and invite the vendors and integrators and partners to come in and educate you, because they'd be happy to come in and talk with you about cloud, virtualization, and any other technologies.
And Brian, any future research plans that might illuminate this whole area of virtualization?
That's interesting. We have a lot going on in the space right now, but we have been discussing with GTSI and doing this again maybe in a year and see what has changed in terms of trend data and perspectives, especially with this survey launching in the field the week before the memo came out from OMB. I think even now there may be some different perspectives. So it's an ever-changing environment, and I think that you'll see a lot of research coming out of both of our organizations in the future.
All right, Jim, we'll give you the last word today. What's your best advice for people now I know what I have to do. What do I do tomorrow?
My best advice to customers is to get a trusted advisor that will guide you through the process of virtualization. And I mean by that by looking at your requirements first, by doing an analysis of those requirements, see which vendors are right for you. As we've talked about, no one size fits all in virtualization. That'll help you assess your particular environment, see how it'll work in virtualized environment, help you go through a proof of concept, and finally into a fully managed and a fully virtualized architecture, and then on into DR and Coop, and even into cloud if you want to go that far.
So it sounds like you need to take a measured approach, but you shouldn't wait around too long because the benefits are out there waiting.
Absolutely. I would say get started now.
All right. Well, I think we've covered a lot of territory, and I know I've learned a lot, and I'm quite certain our listeners have learned a lot. So I want to thank you all for participating. And that's Brian Klopak. He's Director of Research at Government Business Council, and Harry Foxwell, the Principal Technical Consultant at Oracle Public Sector, and Jim Sweeney, the Manager of the Virtualization Consulting Practice at GTSI. This has been Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, sponsored by GTSI and Oracle, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Virtually There, the Federal View of Virtualization, Present and Future, sponsored by GTSI on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any portion of this show, you can listen to the show in its entirety and on demand at federalnewsradio.com.
Across government, federal IT managers are contending with the OMB directive to consolidate data centers. Are you on the right path? Join leading experts from government and industry as they chart a practical roadmap to OMB compliance at the GTSI Technology Leadership Series, May 12th at the Willard Hotel in Washington, D.C. Attend and receive a free copy of their new federal IT survey on virtualization. To register, visit gtsi.com/TLS. GTSI, one mission, yours.
Data center consolidation. It's the mandate of the day. And across federal agencies, IT managers are under mounting pressure to arrive at a workable solution, to save costs, to boost efficiencies. We can help you map a path to greater control with a consolidation solution from GTSI. GTSI, one mission, yours. For more information, visit gtsi.com.
Coming May 16th, one of the largest events held in Montgomery County. It's the Potomac Hunt Steeplechase Races. One of the final races of the season, this family-friendly event features pony rides, a moon bounce, face painting, vendors, horseback riding demonstrations, and more. Bring family, friends, clients, and colleagues. Corporate sponsorships, as well as individual railside parking spaces, are available for purchase. For information, visit PotomacHuntRaces.com. Proceeds from the Potomac Hunt races will benefit the Yellow Ribbon Fund, a nonprofit organization focused on assisting injured service members and their families throughout their recovery and their reintroduction into the community. For more information about the Yellow Ribbon Fund and all the ways they serve our veterans, visit yellowribbonfund.com.
Here's Bill Kroll, ArcSight board member and former deputy director NSA on the 21st Century Cybersecurity Panel, sponsored by ArcSight.
Well, I think that the overhaul of FISMA and emphasis on making it a real-time monitoring capability is an extremely important one because we are wasting literally billions of dollars on the checklist approach to security. And I guarantee you, no one in the commercial world is operating with a checklist.
To listen to the whole program made possible by ArcSight, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
NATO, the Federal Reserve, World Bank, the Department of Treasury, what do they have in common? All turned to ArcSight to secure their critical information and operations. ArcSight identifies, assesses, and mitigates internal and external cyber threats. With the market-leading ArcSight SIEM platform, organizations can safeguard their assets, comply with regulatory policy, and control risks associated with cyber attacks. Learn more at ArcSight.com, ArcSight.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take your world for granted. Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if everything familiar becomes anything but? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at ReadyVirginia.gov. ReadyVirginia.gov. Brought to you by the Virginia Ready Campaign, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Ad Council.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, worldwide on federalnewsradio.com. News and information for and about the federal decision maker. Weekday mornings 6 to 10, listen to The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Jane Norris. They'll give you the story behind the headlines and talk to the federal newsmakers themselves. Then it's In Depth with Francis Rose from 1 to 3, focusing on career development for the federal executive. 3 to 7, join Chris Dorobek and Amy Morris for the Daily Debrief. Live interactive news and analysis on the things that affect your federal career. Federal News Radio 1500 AM also broadcasts all the action of Nats baseball, Caps hockey, GW and American University basketball, Navy athletics, and DC United soccer. Visit federalnewsradio.com for the latest game information and listen on the radio or on your computer to all the game day action. Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
CNN Radio, I'm Matt Cherry. We're following a developing story out of